Here's a little something you may remember from the good old days.
I feel so old.
You're old.
You're so old.
You're so old.
So old.
We're so old.
You're old.
You're old.
We're not so old that we didn't remember that we now do this weekly. Brian Sexton, John Osier, senior correspondent, senior writer. Weekly.
I signed on for weekly?
Well, except for the couple of weeks that we're both getting out of here.
I got you.
You know, late June, early July.
So weekly when we feel like it.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good way to do it. You know, the other thing I was thinking about, who was your favorite sportscaster as a kid growing up watching the Washington Redskins?
If it was a kid, probably Madden.
Okay.
You know, it really wasn't when I was a kid. It was more, late teens, 20s. And, you know, a lot of people criticize Madden now because looking back, I don't know, maybe seems dated. But at the time, he taught a lot of people a lot about the game.
Well, he did.
I was going
with more Brett Musburger.
Sure.
Remember him? He used to say, "You are looking live."
Oh, terrific.
At Busch Stadium in St. Louis, Missouri. And I was thinking, with as much content, as much sports-related content that is now pre-recorded, on demand, what would he say, right? You were listening to something that was live.
Well, he probably still would say it because he was always doing that at the start of NFL Today, which had sort of a big moment feel to it. So, and it's funny, Brent Musburger spent, close to 3 decades doing college football.
Pull that out.
And
college basketball, too.
To me, he's always the NFL Today guy. That was always
Irv Cross and Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah, he was iconic on that.
Phyllis, the whole nine yards. So we start today, right? And as we record this, because it isn't live, rookie minicamp is coming and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And phase three of the offseason
starts
program.
Monday.
Right. Which we call OTAs for our purposes. And the final is the minicamp stage, which comes in a couple of weeks. And the two dominant storylines, John, coming out of last weekend were, ta-da, the quarterback.
Right.
And the offensive line. You're a quarterback guy. Where do you want to start? How do you feel about Blake Bortles as we get set for his fourth season and one in which his greatest scrutiny is in front of him?
Well, you know, this is really the wait and see time of year. And I think it's wait and see on both of these stories. We're going to talk about Brandon Albert and Blake Bortles. And by its nature, because there are no games, we're waiting and seeing. But with Blake, I'm not sure I've ever been around as much of a wait and see offseason story as this one. Usually you're waiting and seeing, okay, how many games are you going to win? With Blake, it's wait and see if his mechanics are right. Wait and see if all this work that he's done, which we've all talked about, is going to have results during the season. Is all the stuff that he's done in January, February, and March on mechanics, is that even the real issue next year? Is it more, okay, he's accurate, but everybody knows accuracy's great, but he's got to get better decision-making before the snap. There's a world of things he has to do in addition to what we've talked about with the mechanics. So everything's wait and see with Blake Bortles. All the fans get that. All the fans write me all the time, hey, I'm tired of hearing about how good he is in the offseason. I don't care until the regular season. Well, you know what? I've got 4 months until the regular season, so I got to talk about something. So we're going to talk about how he's looking right now, but I get it. It's a wait-and-see thing with him.
I don't know why I'm optimistic. Maybe I'm a half, full guy as it is, but knowing what they're going to do with the running game.
Sure.
And understanding that the part of him that was good in 2015 was that sort of, I need to make a play.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make something happen. And I'm just trying to put it all together here and see a guy, and we talked about this last week. You're not going to ask him to throw the ball 625 times.
Right.
I think 450 is probably that sweet spot for him.
You'd love that. That's a big target to hit. It's a low target, but you'd love it.
But at 450, that means the running game is going well, which sets up Allen Robinson, D.D. Westbrook, who they just signed, their fourth-round pick, Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns, whoever you're going to throw to in the short intermediate game as a tight end. It just seems to me like this is a doable thing for him.
You know, there's been, and I'm stealing from a reader who emailed me this week, we've talked the Blake Bortles thing so much this offseason, and there's been all the point-counterpoint stuff, that it almost feels like it's a feast or famine conversation with Blake. Either they're going to cut him after the season, or they're going to sign him to a huge contract, which means he's either been awful or he's been fantastic.
I know where you're going here. This is a good point.
But you wonder, and I'm basing this on the last two games of last season, where he was better. He was good in spots. He was really good against Tennessee. Wasn't great at times in the six quarters after that. You know, the first half against Tennessee was fantastic. So I think that's what the Jaguars saw in the offseason. I don't expect Tom to get down into the absolute details of what he loves, what he saw. But I would think there was conversation going on about, okay, the last two games, when Doug Marrone was the head coach, when this thing was what it might look like next year, he was okay. He had 600 yards, no interceptions. I don't think his performance in that stretch would get him in the Pro Bowl, but it would give you a chance to win. So maybe that's what the realistic goal for Blake Bortles is this year, more of that than the guy we thought coming out of 2015 was going to be a 40-10 guy touchdown. Maybe the last two games is what it is.
Well, you know,
and maybe that's okay.
Well, I think so. And that middle ground is probably where my optimism
lies. There's no middle ground in this, Brian. It's either great or no.
Well, I tend to be an extremist, right? But reality, he responded last year when Doug Marrone and Nate Hackett had those two final games.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very telling of him. You know, he stood there the week that Gus got fired and talked about how they had taken advantage of mm-hmm. the system that Gus put in place. So now here's a demanding coach that's not demanding that he think and that he be introspective and take the pressure off. He is confronting a demanding coach, a demanding executive vice president of football operations, and he has, through the offseason, worked in San Diego with Tom House and embraced the things that are in front of him right now. We haven't heard from him, so we don't know. But I just have this sense from him that if the running game is good, he's good enough to be able to get you to a point where you can make a good decision about him and not have to make a back against the wall.
Right.
Is there a quarterback in the draft? Is there a free agent that we can go sign? But, you know, to kind of let the whole thing mm-hmm. play out.
The only concern that you have when I say last two games, maybe that's what he is. And I think a lot of fans would go, I played pretty good last two games. Yeah. You know, they blew out Tennessee and they very easily could have beaten the Colts. I mean,
they just couldn't move the ball.
It was a toss-up
game.
But if you play that game against the Colts last, see, you probably win five of them. That was a better performance than they had had most of the previous 4 years.
Yep.
So you say, okay, that's what it is. If that's what he is next year, I still think there needs to be something more than that out of your quarterback. You still need a little magic out of that.
You're talking money there? You're talking that's not an $18 million value?
Well, I think it probably would be enough. Playing that way would be enough to get him into that fifth year and would probably be enough for them to have him be the guy because quarterbacks are tough to find. But there's still, in my opinion, to be a franchise guy, to be the quarterback that gets you deep into the playoffs, you need a little more than what he showed in those last two games. But I'll say that by saying this. Get to those last two games consistently for a while, and then worry about the magic. Get six or seven straight games where you've had, I would say 300 yards. He had that. We don't need that. To where you're consistent, to where you're not making the mistakes, to where you're functioning. And then worry about the magic. Maybe the magic will come after you establish yourself as a guy who can do that week in and week out.
All right, transition to the offensive line then, because that's the other big story, and that is
A.J. Cann, right? We're going to talk about A.J. Cann?
Well, we could talk about A.J. Cann.
Oh, Brandon Albert.
Yeah, Brandon Albert and Cam Robinson, the rookie from Alabama, who, you know, has said to anyone that would listen, he hasn't talked to anybody about playing guard. He's not going to play guard. He's a tackle. So the question was posed to me on a radio show. What do you think? Do you think Brandon Albert will be here? And I said, tell me one other place he can go to earn $19 million the next 2 years.
Yeah, and if he doesn't go, I'll go. So if he's not going to show up, give me the address.
Take the money.
I'll put it on my MapQuest.
You'll find out.
I'll even be there early.
And stay late.
Right.
So I expect that he's going to be here.
Because
where else can he go? He doesn't have that kind of leverage.
Well, and also history tells you, if you've seen 100 of these off-season situations, one or two are still topics in September. It's usually something that plays itself out, and we're in a 24/7 media Twitter age right now where everything's a big deal. Everything's a crisis. And I'm reading people writing about this like a crisis, and I get it. If Brandon Albert doesn't show up, if he's not here, then you're talking about a crisis. I mean, I think that's a small if rather than capitalized.
I wonder if crisis is the right word, only that you're better with Cam Robinson on the left side at guard or at tackle than you were last year with Kelvin Beachum, who was dragging his injured knee through the season, and one of the six guys who started at left guard.
Right.
Whether he's a guard or a tackle, you're already better.
Right, and I think an important point to make is there's this feeling that the Jaguars traded Beachum for Albert somehow. And I get that, but that's really not what happened. They let Beachum go, and there was still a chance they could have re-signed him, but realistically, how realistic is it to think they would have re-signed him after not picking up the contract? I mean, usually when that happens, the ship is sailed. I don't say it wouldn't have happened, but I doubt it. So they had really parted ways with Beachum. And then the Brandon Albert thing developed. I see it as they were going to replace Beachum one way or the other, be it the draft or be it the free agent market. They went and got Brandon Albert. I think he'll wind up starting at left tackle. But it's not absurd to think that if they hadn't gone and gotten Brandon Albert, yeah, they probably would have addressed left tackle somewhere, maybe not the caliber that they consider Brandon Albert, but that it would have been a draft pick.
But that's what Albert is saying is, well, you could have gone and got Russell Okung, who is in San Diego now,
right,
but was in Denver. That would have cost you $15, $16 million dollars a year. Why am I a bargain?
Because he signed a contract. And, you know, I'm always about let a player earn as much as he possibly can. If the Jaguars give him X number of dollars to get in here, I have no problem with it. But the reality is, in the NFL, when you sign a contract, you sign a contract for X number of years. You often have a huge number at the end that makes it prohibitive for a team to keep you those last two or three years. Well, that's not the reality of Brandon's contract. The reality of Brandon's contract is it's pretty affordable. It's this fourth year. I mean, I think it's the fourth year out in Miami. But
yeah, there's two more years.
Whatever it is.
He was in Miami.
Usually there's balloon numbers at the end of that that force a guy to be released. With this, there's an $8.6 million, which pretty good deal. I'll take, you know, As a franchise, you'll take it. So the reality when he signed that contract is, I wasn't in the room, it appears to be a contract that was designed to enable him to play it out. If he was playing well, you might play out this whole contract to make all that money. Well, the negative for him at this point is, I guess somebody saw that and said, you know what, that's an affordable deal. I'm going to trade for it. Don't have to pay a signing bonus.
You know another reason why I don't see it as a crisis right now is because while he's gone, fully expecting that he'll be here, you know, for the mini camp, what is it, 13th, 14th, 15th of June?
Then it becomes a story if he's not.
Okay.
Right.
Is that Cam Robinson is getting all the time he needs
sure.
at left tackle in the OTAs next
right.
week, which they're not hitting, I get it, but it's still time to do those mental reps and figure out who his guy is and what the guy next to him is doing
right.
and what the call is all about. You're giving him more time in case he has to play.
Brandon Howard's a veteran. If he comes in here June 13th and is here then all through training camp, he's a veteran left tackle. He needs to block a good pass rushing end, and he needs to be able to run block. I'm not saying there's nothing to learn, but it's not the same as if there was a wide receiver or a quarterback in this situation with a whole bunch to learn in terms of routes. Again, I don't want to minimize what he has to learn because there is a mental side of playing left tackle. But as a veteran, I would have confidence that he can come in here and easily function. Remember, Kelvin Beachum wasn't on the field until third preseason game. So it can be done.
And remember, Kelvin Beachum was dragging that leg. Mm-hmm. I can remember him coming off the sidelines and putting ice on it right away
right.
and dragging it back out onto the field at the end of the season. I can remember him sitting and having a conversation in the hotel in Chicago, you know, and he had this look on his face. I'm like, am I going to play or not?
Right.
It was a problem for him all last year. So if Albert's here, you are significantly better than you were with Brandon Albert.
That's not to say Beachum couldn't have improved. I think he probably would have improved off the ACL.
His first year, right.
But, you know, to me, clearly they saw something in Beachum, either the knee or style, that they didn't love and didn't fit with what they wanted to do. You know, Doug's in the room with, I'm not saying Doug said, I don't want this guy.
Right.
But there wasn't enough banging on the table to keep him. So they wanted to separate that. They wanted to go in this direction. You know, it makes sense to me. Brandon Albert is considered, he's an ex-left guard. I mean, he played guard in college. He's a guy who run blocks. This is what the team wants to do. To me, Kelvin was a little bit more of a pass-blocking left tackle.
And that's the key. The run blocking is the key. Because everyone's talking about, you know, the pass blocking side of this thing, and Albert can certainly do that.
Right.
But Bortles was sacked 34 times last year.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's not an astronomically high number. Not like the
they
55
were more
times
more than
the year
adequate
before.
Passing the ball last year. I mean, in terms of giving time, they could have been better.
Right.
But that wasn't what caused 3-13.
No, you couldn't run the ball when you needed to. You'd like to have run the ball in Houston. Right in week 15. If you can run the ball in Houston in week 15 and get a couple of first downs on the ground and eat the clock, you win that game.
Well, I think Doug has said it a couple of times, if I recall, to him, and he's not alone in this philosophy as a coach, to him, running is being able to run when you need to run.
Yeah.
And you're talking about it. And my guess is if he looked at 16 games last year, even the games where they ran well, probably too many instances where when you had to go do it, you couldn't go do it.
How
and
about
that's
Kansas
what they
City?
Want to be able to do.
Remember the Kansas City game where the big defensive tackle who is now in Atlanta, Dontari Poe, right, broke through the line and stuffed Chris Ivory in the backfield.
In a game where they ran for almost 200 yards.
Absolutely.
Or maybe over 200.
Couldn't
I can't remember the number. But
when they absolutely needed to. If he gets it there, they win that game. And,
remember
so
Doug's philosophy last year. He was very upfront about it after the Indianapolis game where everybody was criticizing it, maybe rightfully so, about not kicking at the end or going for it at the end of the game. And he was pretty clear of, hey, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And that's his philosophy. He wants to be able to run and control the game at crucial points with the running game. Criticize that all you will, but it was insight into his philosophy. That's what this team wants to do, and I think that's why Brandon Albert's here. And I don't doubt that he'll be here come June 13th, 14th, and 15th.
All right. So we'll find out next week, obviously, what the situation is and when we do this podcast next week, because we will do it next week. You remind me, I'll
if
remind
we remember.
You. We'll get Joe.
Maybe we're old.
Write it down. Mark it.
I'll do
next
that.
Week we'll do it.
John, I'll put it in my app.
In your app. Not that old.
That's right.
Senior writer, Brian Sexton, senior correspondent, produced by Joe Fortunato, senior executive producer of Senior Moments. Enjoy your week, folks.